About today's talk, I woke up as a graduate student 40 years ago. It was a nice day. It was the spring. It wasn't the fall. It was supposed to be what I was expecting to be my graduate school education was supposed to be idyllic and happy. But when the year that I graduated from with my undergraduate degree, first Martin Luther King and then Bobby Kennedy were shot, put a kind of damper on it, and the Vietnam War was going on, and so it was a very different period, and we were, it wasn't a total shock to we were ready to believe anything after those murders, but it still came as a shock to me when I saw the cover of Ramparts magazine, which was a popular muckraking magazine at that time. And on the cover was the picture of the vice president of the country we were investing billions of dollars and lives in, South Vietnam, and it was Marshal Nguyen Cao Ky, and says, "Is he the biggest pusher in the world?" And it went on to a very long and authoritative article and about how the people we were working with, especially the CIA, which was the main driving force in getting America involved in Indochina, was working together with corrupt politicians, gangsters, and especially in Indochina, opium growers. So this one really threw me for a loop because I wasn't ready for it, but fortunately the two people who are our speakers tonight were working on books that were about this subject, and so I benefited from the fact that their books came out. The first by Professor Al McCoy, who's a distinguished professor of history at a great history department. As far as I remember, that's where William Appleman Williams was at one time, the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And he is the undisputed world scholar. In fact, he just about invented the subject of the politics of heroin and as it applies to intelligence operations in the war in Indochina. And actually, this is a photograph. The man who has it on his head is the poet Allen Ginsberg. He was protesting in August 1972 at the Republican National Convention. He thought they should read this book. It was a bestseller, but not because they responded to what he was doing. And this book, you could read today, and it's as relevant today as it ever was. In fact, I forget exactly when, maybe 20 years later, after the first war in Afghanistan involving the United States in the 80s, and when we recruited Islamic fundamentalists and other jihadists, including Osama bin Laden, to fight and oust the Soviets from Afghanistan, just as during the war in Indochina, Southeast Asia became the source of the majority of the, by far most of the heroin that went into the illicit supply. So in the 80s, coincidentally, Afghanistan became the source of all that supply. So Professor McCoy did us another great favor, and he revised his book, and he called it The Politics of Heroin, because he realized Southeast Asia was not the only place where this was going on, and he has a great discussion of the people we recruited, some of whom were major heroin traffickers. And again, today, in the second war in Afghanistan, after 9/11, in the last 10 years, after a slight dip when the Taliban took over, when we ousted them, Afghanistan again set records for heroin production. And actually, this is not very clear. It's called The War Conspiracy, and it's a book by Professor Scott. And Professor Scott, his specialty is figuring out who are the real powers that be who are making these decisions. Because one of the things that always troubled me and has troubled me to this day is, in whose benefit are these foreign policy decisions being made? I mean, it didn't seem to me like people like me had a vested interest in the war in Indochina or in almost any of these minor skirmishes that have continually, and some major skirmishes, wars that last forever, and our we spend the bulk of our budget on the Pentagon. I never quite understood why. Whose name is this being done? And Professor Scott pinpoints, even as early as 1972, the same within a few weeks of Professor McCoy's coming out, who are the people, including people on Wall Street, who had assumed major senior positions, let's say in the early CIA, who were making these decisions. And that Wall Street theme came back to me after the financial meltdown about who rules who, Washington or Wall Street. So I just to fill in a few other things, I realized over time that what was going on in Vietnam was horrible, but it was nothing new. And in fact, if you go to the origins of the CIA and the people who were there from the start, you find out that this man, for example, General Carl Wolf, who was the SS general second in the SS to Heinrich Himmler and responsible for transporting hundreds of thousands of people to Auschwitz to meet their doom, in the last year of the war, he was the head of the occupying forces of Germany in Italy. And the head of the American intelligence agency at wartime, the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, which became the CIA, based in the man burst in Bern, Switzerland, whose name is Alan Dulles, he was negotiating, responding to feelers put out by the German generals to negotiate a surrender before the Russians arrived on the scene, behind Stalin's back. And Alan Dulles was the head of that office who was doing this, was reprimanded by the White House when Roosevelt was still alive and told to stop, but he persisted. And it even went so far as when the Italian underground, who were our allies, we have to remind ourselves, during the war, captured General Wolfe, Alan Dulles engineered his rescue. And just to make matters worse, this is probably somebody who whose name may not be familiar for most people. His name is Walter Rauf, and he was an SS colonel. And he was an interesting person. He was, you might have heard of the mobile gas vans, where people were poisoned to death in vans that he had come up with a clever idea of having the exhaust into the interior of vans so that people could be murdered. It had to be stopped there after a while because getting rid of the bodies and the smell was bothersome, but he managed to claim around 100,000 victims before that ended. He too was protected. In fact, Carl Wolf escaped judgment at Nuremberg, and he lived to a ripe old age after spending a few years in prison. Walter Rauf never went to prison. He was actually smuggled to South America. And one of the interesting things about that, and there's Alan Dulles, the guy who did that. I'll just jump forward, that in the Israeli progressive newspaper Haaretz, there was an article that caught my eye in 2007. In the late 40s, Walter Rauf, SS officer responsible for the murder of at least 100,000 people and wanted by allies as a war criminal, was employed by the Israeli Secret Service. And this is an Israeli newspaper reporting this. Instead of bringing him to justice, it paid for his services and helped him escape to South America, just like Adolf Eichmann. And documents of the CIA released over the past several years show that the Americans were aware that Rauf's case was not exceptional. So the CIA and Israeli intelligence were doing similar things back then. And just as the end, this is Alan Dulles, the man who was the OSS chief in Bern. Alan Dulles became one of either the first, second or the third director of the CIA in around 1952 or 3. He eventually His brother, John Foster Dulles, was the Secretary of State under Eisenhower, and he and both of these men were, you know, extreme, were strongly anti-communist, as they said. Dulles was eventually, you might have heard of the Bay of Pigs invasion, when the CIA, with Cuban exiles, arranged an invasion of Cuba that turned out to be a fiasco. Kennedy fired Allen Dulles at that point. And when Kennedy was shot, Allen Dulles was put on the Warren Commission to investigate things like whether the CIA was involved in the murder of JFK. And just the last thing, talking about Wall Street, Professor Scott, one of the most interesting tidbits in his, and it's always in the footnotes. If you read his books, you have to read the footnotes. And in one of the footnotes, he put a list of some of the early leaders of the CIA, really top people in the early 50s. Frank Wisner, head of CIA covert operations, and his point here is that they had a common denominator for most of these people was that they were either Wall Street bankers or Wall Street lawyers. So Wisner worked for the law firm Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn. William Harding Jackson, deputy director of CIA at one point, worked for the same firm and later was on the board of Bankers Trust. Allen Dulles, deputy and later director of the CIA, eventually worked for the prestigious law firm Sullivan and Cromwell and became a partner. And before that, interestingly, and I could go on and on for this, is he represented a German bank, its subsidiary, the Schroeder Bank. During World War II, he represented the subsidiary of that bank. And Murray McConnell, Manufacturers Capital, Wall Street, Deputy Director for Administration, Walter Reed Wolf, National City Bank. He was actually Vice President, CIA Deputy Director at one point, Louis C. Becker, goes on and on. Dylan Reed, on loan as Deputy Director of Intelligence. So I began to see from reading books, going back to Peter's book after the Wall Street financial meltdown, that there seems to be a continuity of political power and influence, and it poses a possible explanation for why these policies don't seem to be serving people like me. So without further ado, we're going to go back and try to understand that picture of General Nguyen Cao Ky, Vice President of South Vietnam, and how could it possibly be that he was one of the biggest heroin pushers in Southeast Asia, and the man who is the world's expert on that and related issues is Professor Al McCoy, one of my heroes. Here's another one, is Professor Scott, Al McCoy of the University of Wisconsin.